Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
Every Monday, it's Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show. We are joined today by Trey Lewis as well for the first hour of this program. At the second hour, at some point, we'll be talking to Ben Jealous, president of the National NAACP. We may have a conversation with the great Reverend Dr. Braxton. We're not sure if that's going to work out. We'll find out around the 6 o'clock hour. Whatever happens, you're here, and we want you to join us at 410-319-8888. Let's talk politics for today about the election coming up tomorrow. I'm very curious, nationally and locally, what everybody's thinking. So stay with us. We'll be right back right after a trip through traffic at WEAA. Come on back to the conversation. Stay with us.
Support for WEAA is provided by Jared, the Galleria of Jewelry, offering a selection of jewelry at Jared store locations.
Traffic this time, a service of Advil, and what we've got is two pretty big problems northbound on the Harrisburg Expressway. Looks like they are both northbound. One had a load of steel in the roadway up at Chewan Road, and the next, that center lane was blocked because of that. Now we're investigating word of an accident reported approaching the incident. So could be that the debris in the roadway set off the accident, vice versa. But either way, you could see a mess northbound on the Harrisburg. Stick with York Road or Falls Road as a detour. Overturned vehicle finally cleared Harford Road at Long Green Pike. Looks like Belair Road still could save you some time. No major problems at this point on the west side, just heavy traffic, 795 down to Edmondson. And it looks like an earlier problem, Old Court at Reisterstown in the wrap-up stages. Matt Tacka, Baltimore area traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. I am here, of course, every Monday with my dear friend and co-host and colleague, Anthony McCarthy.
Great to be here, Mark. Big day tomorrow across the country and, of course, right here in Maryland.
And we are joined today by Trey Lewis. Trey Lewis is president, do I have that right?
Yes, sir.
Of the Young Republicans.
Yes, sir.
It is Young Republicans.
It is. We are Young Republicans.
Not aging Republicans.
No, not aging. Not yet. We
so
are
like
young.
You're almost antithetical to the reality of the party. Sorry, man.
I know. Hey, I know it was coming eventually.
Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Trey Lewis is a very bright guy, and I always love to have him on the show. 410-319-8888 and has a lot of integrity. 410-319-8888. Join us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We can talk state or local politics. Next hour, we're going to focus a lot on national politics. This hour, we'll talk about both and whatever, wherever you want to take us. We are very curious, again, about Martin O'Malley and Robert Ehrlich and the other candidates who are running and where you are going to vote and how, and whether you're undecided, what you think about the ballot referendums. I might touch a bit on Somerset County and the huge issue there around a race in that election that nobody's talking about anywhere, and they should be. We'll be following that after the election and see what happens. I'll tell you more about that story in a minute. With the first congressional district and whose race that's going to be, it's anybody's race at this point, is very, very tight. And just what are the issues here? People are saying that Barack Obama's been too liberal. Liberals are saying that Barack Obama really didn't make the fight the people's case, which is why it allowed the populist right-wing outrage to take place in among the Tea Party. And then people argue, well, the Tea Party is nothing more than is a very populist rage, but is nothing more than something fueled by corporate entities. And once their candidates win, they're going to realize they're not what they thought they were. What do you think? 410-319-8888. Trey Lewis, we'll let you have first pop at it.
Well,
you're a semi-minority here.
I'm a semi-minority. Yes, yes, yeah. You know, I think it's fun. I love these. This is probably the most exciting midterm election I can think of in a very long time in American history. 06 was pretty exciting, but not like this year's. It's going to be interesting to see the way the nation votes, because midterm elections usually are indicative of what the people think about the current president. We saw what the people thought in 06 about the current president with Bush, with some of his policies which weren't the most ideal for the American people, and they voted adamantly against it. In 2010, it's the same deal, but with a Democrat president. So it's going to be interesting.
I think the only difference there, and I agree with Trey, I think midterm elections certainly are a bellwether for the incumbent administration. But traditionally, the incumbent administration loses a lot of seats during midterm elections. So I, along with Arianna Huffington and others, don't believe we should read too much into these midterm elections. They're very significant, but we have to be very careful of drawing some real broad conclusions by major losses by Democrats, or if Republicans don't have the major gains that we're expecting them to have, Mark, tomorrow. But I also think that we have to really ask the question about Barack Obama. Less about how well the Republicans do, but how poorly Democrats do. The base of the Democratic Party, Mark, the progressives and others, this broad coalition that brought Barack Obama to office is splintered horribly, including independents are trending overwhelmingly towards moderate and conservative Republicans. And so Barack Obama and his team, if all the polls that are currently indicating major losses are correct, will have to hit the ground running the very next day trying to figure out what can they do, what message can they send to the American people that begins to turn this huge ship, and ships take a lot of time to turn around, this huge ship around by 2012.
I'll posit this now, and I'll posit it again the next hour when we hit our national show on Free Speech TV together, that I think that it's not what a lot of people are making it to be. My perspective on this is that I think that if you look at what's going on with Barack Obama right now, it's not so much that he was too liberal, pushed to make policies that made the conservative streak in America erupt. I think it was the fact that he was not perceived as a fighter by many of those who supported him and were upset by that. Young voters, and more progressive voters, who wanted to see a fight for a public option, even if it lost, who wanted to see a standing up to the banks, which they didn't see. And that was perceived as being too corporate. When the health care legislation came through, it got all bogged down because of the power of the corporate interests in America.
Right.
And they defined it rather than having the people define it or the Democrats define it or even Republicans define it. It was defined by the corporate world. And so it got bogged down on that. And then what happened with that was that that allowed it to be usurped, I think, by the right wing, who said, who then said he was going against the grain of the American people, and it made this part of the American people erupt, who were already upset because they have a black president, and among other things, and politics wasn't their suiting, and that erupted, and then that became a populist shield for what I think are corporate interests, which have now decided to fund the Republican Party instead of the Democrats. They got out of the Democrats what they wanted, which was the end of healthcare the way people wanted it, and financial regulation that didn't hurt them too bad, and now they're going to back the Republicans and the populists and put all their money into that. And their money has just soaked this campaign in the blood of profit-making organizations. That's how I see it.
Yeah, and you're right. You're right. One thing that's also is ideal is that President Obama is probably the first president we've had in many decades, probably since Wilson, is the most idealist. And the problem with idealism is that the premise is good. For example, universal health care. That's a good premise. I mean, no one should be in favor of a government letting its people die and go unhealthy. But the problem is that there's really no framework, I don't believe, for the ideas that he had. And that's the problem with idealists, is that sometimes they allow these interventions of other people, special interests, primarily, especially in the country we live today, special interest runs Washington. And so what happened was is that the premise and the ideas that were formulated during the campaign of Obama in 08 and probably the first couple months while he was in office kind of withered away and was overcome by special interests and was overcome by his base, the Democrats that were in power and saying, listen, you do this for us. We put some extra stuff in there in healthcare that has nothing to do with healthcare. We put some extra things in the bill, put some extra things in the stimulus package, put some extra things in this and this and that. We'll take care of you. And it kind of backfired on him.
I think that one of the things we should look at, Mark, is the fact that if the Democrats lose the House tomorrow, and I think they will lose the House tomorrow.
You think they will?
I think they're going to lose the House tomorrow. I think the Republicans are going to gain well over 50 seats. I think that they're going to do extraordinarily well. But, Mark, as I was doing some tracking today, the Congress people, the members of Congress that are who were losing, who were really having trouble with their Republican challengers – And we've seen over the last 2 weeks a lot of that began to shift for some Democrats in the House. But they were Democrats in the House, and I wish I had brought my notes in so I could give you some examples of those districts. but many of those Democrats, Mark, that began to see a shift in their favor were Democrats who stood up and explained why they voted for the health care bill and the things that they thought were good for the American people in the health care bill. The Democrats who stood up and said, this is why I supported the last stimulus, and this is why I supported reform on Wall Street. This is even why I believe that we needed to compromise on some of these issues. I think people in these districts wanted to hear or be reminded why these Democratic members of Congress pushed this agenda. And the Democrats who are running away from health care reform, Democrats that are running away from the stimulus, Democrats who are regretting voting for Wall Street reform, Democrats that really were looking to kind of paint themselves as more moderate than they really are, or their votes in Washington would say, are having a lot of problems because the progressives are mad at them in their districts, and the Republicans and the conservatives are motivated to vote.
But also the key thing is that, and what you're saying is 100% true, but also voters sometimes don't want to see their congressmen and they don't want to see their senators kind of be lame ducks for the president. It didn't work for the Republicans when we had the House and we had the Senate, and every single Republican senator and congressman basically did everything in accordance with the Bush agenda. And even though there were fundamental things that were not suited for the progression of the country, people don't want to see that. People want their elected officials to stand their own ground. I know it's the president and they should follow the leader of the party, but the fact of the matter is that people do not want their elected officials to do anything and everything that either their party leader says or the special interests say.
Well, I would disagree with you only in that Barack Obama has had to pull moderate Republicans towards a progressive agenda, kicking and screaming, whether it's Ben Nelson or others who are caucusing independents like Lieberman and others. They have done more to hurt President Barack Obama's agenda on major, major issues, including Wall Street reform and the stimulus package, than some of the Democrats. I mean, the Republicans. We knew where the Republicans were. It was Ben Nelson and others that right. really were real sticks in the side of Barack Obama.
See, where America is, let's go open the phones right here. But yeah. Where America is today, you all know a man in American history. His name is Ferdinand Pecora, P-E-C-O-R-A. Ferdinand Pecora in the 1930s was an Italian immigrant, one of the few college lawyers who ran against the image of the gangster thug of the 30s. Mm-hmm. And he was appointed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt and created the Pecora Commission, which really investigated the activities of Wall Street and the banks that led to the Glass-Steagall Act and all these acts that put the economy on a right footing from the 1930s or more right footing from the 1930s until the 1970s. And if Barack Obama had found his Pecora, if he had created a commission that fought the interest of Wall Street and big capital, American people would have, even if he couldn't get it all through Congress, American people would have surged behind him, I think. Mm-hmm. Because I think that that's what they wanted to see.
I agree. I don't think it's too late. I think he still has time.
And we'll ask our listeners across the country this in the next hour as well. 410-319-8888. D in Baltimore, what do you think?
Yeah, am I on?
Yes,
you're on,
hi,
man.
D.
You're on.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for letting me on. Look, I just want to say two quick things. One is that the Republicans are so good, offense. I mean, let's just think back. As soon as Bill Clinton got into the president's office, they started investigating him nonstop. I mean, until they found out something about, Monica Lewinsky, 8 years later, or 6 years later. Same with Barack Obama. As soon as he got in there, the first thing he started saying, he's not an American citizen. He's a Muslim. I mean, and then you have all these, different news outlets that are going on 24 hours just spewing fear. So, there's a perfect storm. People losing their jobs, and they're hearing fear just coming out. Well, this guy, we can't trust him, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then, they're just prone, to believe Sarah Palin, Tea Party people. The last thing I want to say is that, I'm very disappointed, with the president because, his base, that really put him over, you know, were the progressive. You know, it wasn't the moderate. I mean, you know, Barack Obama, you know, is really running this country, you know, like you know, people in the middle, you know, put him there. I, you know, he's always trying to build consensus, you know, trying to get people, you know, in West Virginia, you know, to vote for him. You know, I mean, you know, they just won't. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I think that goes along
Anthony
with
McCarthy.
Along with what we were talking about earlier, Mark. I think that this president may have gotten tripped up by trying to govern to the center. Now, the truth is, when he ran for office, he was governing, or at least speaking to the center. But he was also addressing a real exhausted country and an exhausted nation that had been really trotting through these horrendous wars, watching our economic situation get worse and worse after 8 years of George W. Bush. We stood on a cliff, and Barack Obama spoke hope to us and brought us back. But what happens is Americans have a very short memory, and they wanted change, Mark, but they wanted it quickly. And then they saw a compromise on the public option. They saw a compromise on Wall Street reform. They began to see a series of compromises that did not speak to that progressive coalition that put Barack Obama in office.
But that's what we're talking about, though. The American people don't want to hear catering to any particular group. That's the reason why the religious right lost their power in the mid-2000s, because the president of the United States is not in a position to cater to one particular part of the ideology. His job is to make it so that fundamental issues of the country are dealt with. And it shouldn't be dealt with a total liberal hand. It shouldn't be dealt with a total conservative hand. It should be dealt with that the interests and the benefits of all peoples are serviced.
Neocons ran Washington over the 8 years of George Bush. Neocons wrote an agenda, and George Bush followed it. Now, he did grow government. He added to the deficit. He did a lot of things that ticked off conservatives, but not neocons. They loved this far right crazy agenda that had us not only policing the world, but trying to really change the ideology of the world with these wars.
Well, I consider myself in some degree a neocon, but the thing is that when George Bush got into office, like I said before, there were certain issues that he had to deal with immediately upon getting to office. That one of the biggest ones, obviously, was
like a big deficit.
How to take a surplus and turn it into
ones. No, you said we were talking about foreign affairs. The one of the biggest ones in foreign affairs was that we had Islamic fundamentalists fighting us. Okay, so he had to take that issue to their doorstep. Now, the way he went about it wasn't totally right. I do not believe the intervention in Iraq was necessary at that particular time. However, Afghanistan definitely was a number one. The fact of the matter is that there were certain things that Bush did in his tenure as a president that catered to the one particular ideology.
I have
ideology.
A pretty long list, actually.
certain things that he did was not very they didn't come into full circle.
Let me go back to the phones here. In Afghanistan, though, now we've been there for longer than we've been anywhere.
Generations.
Right. So what's going to happen is we've not gotten Osama bin Laden, or Osama bin Laden. We've not gotten al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. And the Taliban's about to come back into power. We did a really good job there.
Well, the thing with Afghanistan is when we were on the cusp of actual total victory, and didn't
we were never in the cusp of victory.
What's also important to understand is that when the neocons constructed Afghanistan, it was important that the main job was the destabilization of Islamic fundamentalists.
But that didn't happen.
But it has happened, though, to a degree. It has happened, meaning that the fact is that we as Americans and our interests are not being attacked. And that was satisfied. And so that was the job and goal. Now, as far as Afghanistan is concerned, the State Department
other than
has
this cargo planes full of bombs that just landed in the United States of America.
What I'm saying is that the nation building of plan of Afghanistan was not very it was not constructed well. It was not made in accordance that democracy would thrive and survive in Afghanistan. The only goal initially of Afghanistan, this is where the Bush administration went wrong. Their initial goal was only to rid the country of Islamic fundamentalists. It was to rid the country as being the haven for terrorists of all over the world to go
but
and
they
seek
didn't.
Refuge. To a degree, they did, though. To a degree, they did.
They didn't. I mean, it's still.
It was a destabilization. That's the problem with it, is that it wasn't a full front effort. It was kind of it was a hammy performance, and that's why Afghanistan didn't go the way that
there's never been a country in the history of humankind, starting with Alexander the Great, through the British and the Russians in the 1980s, and the Americans and their NATO friends, that have been able to win in Afghanistan.
That's right. But that was that wasn't the goal, though. The goal in Afghanistan, the goal was the military intervention.
We haven't done that.
Well, we have done that.
Wait a minute. We have not. I mean, Osama bin Laden is still in the loose. Most of al-Qaeda's leadership is still in the loose.
And about
to
become even more powerful.
They're now in Somalia, Yemen, the Sudan, many other countries where they're operating in the chaotic parts of the world. And we haven't done anything. I mean, we're still that was clearly a failed strategy from the beginning.
What we did was take off the crown, the haven of terrorists around the world.
Osama bin Laden is still there.
He is still there. If he's still in, he might be in Pakistan. He might be in Afghanistan.
The primary goal was
destabilization. That was the primary goal of the Bush administration.
But what I'm trying to say, Trey, is I don't understand where we've stabilized anything. I mean,
well, obviously, Trey does believe that.
I mean,
I'm not saying under President Bush,
we had an opportunity to go into Pakistan and get Osama bin Laden. For some reason, he and his security team called it off at the moment when we had him in our sights, he didn't do it. Instead, he invaded Iraq.
Right. That's the problem of it, is that it wasn't a full-fold system. It was supposed to destabilize Afghanistan and make it so that we put in a government that was more accepting of the people, more freedoms allotted, voting,
and
things of that sort.
Did we do that?
And we didn't do that in its totality. But, however, elements of it is there. And what we were supposed to do in Iraq was the same thing that we did in Afghanistan, but we actually completed it a little bit more. Yes, the violence is still occurring in Iraq, but the fact of the matter is that Iraq is a democracy. It might not be a thriving democracy. It might not be the most safe place in the world. But there's fundamental things that are not there in Iraq. Number one being Saddam Hussein. Number two is being
Over the weekend, 100 Catholics were kidnapped by extremists.
We're talking about what we're doing in two parts of the world.
Bombs are still going off in Baghdad.
What we're talking about is in two parts of the world is that one as you pointed out, going all the way back to Alexander the Great has always been an area in which have been tribal leaders, and it's been no centralized government, and it's been no real organization. Then we go over to Iraq, which for the past five centuries has been ruled by another person, whether it be the British or the Ottomans or the Persians. So they've never had a stable government in over 1,500 years.
Who's never had a stable government?
The Iraqi people of their own.
That's really not true.
But they've been conquered for the past 1,500 years.
Not 1,500 years, but Iraq has had stable governments for a long time. The Ottoman Empire I don't want to get into all this now. We need to get back to the elections. 410, we're getting really offside off. We want folks to join us here. And I'm also curious about how you think about this election tomorrow.
Especially here in Maryland.
We have Ehrlich versus O'Malley. We've got we have referendums here in the state of Maryland that are deeply meaningful in terms of the future of the state. Constitutional convention, whether or not people should be allowed to have a jury trial for less than $15,000 in a civil suit. Those issues are very important issues, and we want to see how you feel about those. And then there's Somerset County, that has the third largest African-American population in the state of Maryland. It has never had a countywide elected official, and the Department of Justice is about to investigate Crisfield, Maryland, to see if black folks were denied the right to vote in their mayoral election just recently. And there's an African-American running in a three-way race for sheriff of that county and who may win. We'll see. So this is very historic stuff that no one's covering on the Eastern
Shore.
Very true. 410-319-8888. Veronica, you're on the air.
Hi,
Veronica.
I just want to say I agree with the last caller, and that Barack Obama's only been there 2 years. And it's unfortunate that we Americans do have a short memory. And it took 8 years of the Bush administration to get us in the messes we're in. But we expected him to come in and wave a wand and just fix everything overnight. It doesn't work that way. And I think it's unfortunate. And even with the health care bill and all that, when he does propose something, not only Republicans but Democrats fight him tooth and nail to get what they want. So by the time something's passed, it's a watered-down version of what it should have been. I mean, that's just the way it is. And it's unfortunate. But in this election here, with the two people running for governor, there's no way I could support a governor who did not support the first African-American president. And he makes no issue about that. He makes it very clear he did not support Obama and doesn't support him now. So why should I support a governor who wouldn't support the first African-American president? Why was he less than any other person running for president?
Did you talk? Are you talking about O'Malley or Ehrlich?
Ehrlich.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ehrlich has. I mean, I didn't want to call his name, but he's made no secret that he didn't support Obama then, and he doesn't support him now.
Right.
You know, when he wanted the African-American vote, he pulled out Michael Steele. And that was the first time that I remember in my years that you even saw the picture of someone's lieutenant governor. There were certain neighborhoods in Baltimore City where there were full-size posters of Michael Steele, all to get the African-American vote. So when it was important for Ehrlich to win the governorship, he could pull out pictures of an African-American as his running mate to get the vote. He doesn't care about, you know, if you care about African-Americans, you didn't vote for the first African-American president. He makes no issue about that. And it's not like I support Democrats 100%. I have a Republican person in my neighborhood who's running for a county seat. He's a neighbor of mine. So he'll get my vote just based on the fact that he's my neighbor, and I know he's going to work for our neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
If you're a governor who cannot support the first African—
Okay, all right. No, I think we got that, Veronica. I understand.
I don't understand her when she said that Ehrlich didn't support the president when he wasn't governor in 2008. I don't understand. Martin O'Malley endorsed Hillary Clinton, so I don't understand what she says that he doesn't support.
Well, he did
her.
Use his bully pulpit to really attack Obama and his policies on the radio station.
And has made it very clear during this election cycle that he would like to see a repeal of health care reform.
There are certain elements of the health care bill.
Not
that he
certain
said
elements. He does say he does not support certain elements, and he supports certain elements, but he wants a repeal of the entire health care reform.
Right. He wants to start from scratch to make it what the health care bill what it was designed to do was accessibility and affordability. The health care bill didn't do that. That's what he wants to do, make it accessible and affordable. And it's not— the health care plan didn't do that. Not the one in place, not the current one in place.
It did make it accessible because you can't be denied insurance. You have to be— it has to be universally accepted by everybody. It was a huge step forward in that way. And it's nothing I've ever heard that Robert Ehrlich has ever said that would give me a health care program that would do that.
Well, in his in his 2020 vision plan, he outlines that he wants to make it so that healthcare is affordable and accessible to more people.
But how? When he's going to cut all the money that the state's bringing in, where's the money going to come from?
Certain things that he has in place, as far as like he wanted to repeal the sales tax, I don't believe that's actually going to happen. But there are certain measures involved in place that he wants to do where he's going to fund certain programs like he did when he was governor before. I mean, when the Thornton bill was passed by the General Assembly, they didn't give him $1 for the bill. That was to construct new buildings for Morgan State, Coppin State, Bowie, and Eastern Shore. And he found the money. He made it happen.
By raiding the transportation fund, by raiding existing coffers of things that now we have no money left in the transportation fund because of that.
Well, I mean, the transportation fund was— a lot of that money came from when in his tenure came from the federal government. So he didn't have to use the state allocated money for that. He used the federal money that was given. For example, for the inter-county connector, which was for the first time actually.
That's a disaster on both their houses.
Well, for the first time, actually received funding, and now it's almost fully operational.
Thanks to
the efforts of
Bob Ehrlich. You can get stuck in the inter-county connector as well as
95.
410-319-8888. A lot of people are calling us. Let's get some calls in here. Then we'll take a break and come back to everybody's call one after the other. Let's go to Jeff in College Park. You're on the air.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey,
good, Jeff.
Jeff.
Welcome.
Hey, and thanks for taking my call. I thought this conversation you guys had was a very interesting and spirited discussion. Actually, I'm from Washington, D.C., but I happened to stop out here in College Park to stop at the cleaners. But what I can't seem to get over is gentleman that's on your show, he says he's a neocon. Wow. That's deep.
Do you know what?
Why,
you know,
is,
you,
why is that deep? I'm
right. Do you
curious.
Know what a neocon is, sir?
Well, wait. Well, let's see what he means by that.
A neocon is a conservative light, as far as I'm concerned. But the crux of the neocons' position is that they want to go out and change the ideology, as the gentleman said before, of all the folks all across the world. That's what I get about the neocons. It's not about social conservatism. It's about dominating the economics and the finance of the world. But that's neither here nor there, because I'm not an expert on that. But what I am kind of calling in about, though, mm-hmm. is I believe, and I don't know if I could, if this will bear itself out, but I believe that the vast majority of the elections across the country are rigged. I believe that no matter what Obama wanted to do with the progressive agenda that he wanted to embark upon, there was always going to be some way that somebody's going to find something wrong with it. And it all just kind of bears itself out. We have folks all across the country who have been, how would I say it, their credentials, they have been discredited across the board. You got your, one of my favorite neocons, Newt Gingrich, and Tom DeLay, and a whole host of folks who have been discredited. And then once they're out, then we just can't wait to bring them all back in. I don't get it. And you never give the folks, they call themselves the silent majority, right? But you never give these folks, and I'm not talking about the silent majority that the Republican, the contract with what? America folks brought in. I'm talking about the folks who you don't hear about. You always hear about all these folks who are making all this noise, the Tea Party folks, the folks who just...
And you're not hearing about who?
They're taking away my Social Security. But the folks who are really talking level-headed, thoughtful stuff, they get cut off and all of that. And I thank y'all for letting me talk, because I'm just rambling right now.
We appreciate your call, Jeff. And we have to take a short break. And we're going to come right back to the phones. I'm here with Anthony McCarthy, my dear friend and colleague, who's with me every Monday. Trey Lewis, president of the Baltimore City Young Republicans, and you at 410-319-8888. The next caller up was going to be somebody who just hung up. So we'll go to George in Carroll County as we come back. 410-319-8888. Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. And in the studio with Anthony McCarthy and Mark Steiner is Trey Lewis,
yes,
president
sir.
Of the Baltimore City Young Republicans.
Yes, sir.
410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Let us go right to the phones. And George in Carroll County, you are on the air.
Hello, sir.
Hi, George.
Hi, George.
Welcome.
The Eastern Shore issues are very interesting to me. I know the Eastern Shore well. I've sailed the bay a lot. And the legacy from the 1920s, the racial violence, lynchings, murders that were rife in Crisfield, Cambridge, Somerset County, and all around.
Yep.
Over the last 30 years, there have been an outflow from the Western Shore, mostly of rich people, to build their dachas on the Eastern Shore. And if you go to Cambridge, just like 40 years ago, the sewage backs up in the bay and hangs right next to the black community. Mm. And meanwhile, you can go past Oxford to other places, and it's little Victorian gardens for rich people. And they all walk around in little restaurants. And then 10 miles away, there will be sewage lapping up against the shores of the bay, and they don't care,
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more than past time some black people be able to get in some public office on that throwback area called the Eastern Shore of Maryland. I mean, it's just tragic.
Well, I will tell you this. This is a little stat that's really interesting about Eastern Shore of Maryland and Somerset County in particular, a county we have focused on a lot. I'm just going to read you some stats that we have here from our work. 42% of that county is African American. There has never been a elected official in that county that's African American. Only 3.5% of the county's employees in the top side of that county are African American. That of all the new hires, only three were black in the county government. And so it is it's almost a throwback in some ways to another era. And so that's a big issue. Race is a huge issue, as is the question of pollution of the bay and the rest. So Eastern Shore is a major election. And I've interviewed a lot of those folks, and we have a new program called On Delmarva, and we're following that. And we maybe follow that in the next On Delmarva episode to look at what happened post-election and what those results tell us about what the future may hold. But it's true. It's and I know that well because I was a civil rights worker there myself in 1963 and spent time in the Cambridge County Jail, and not a very pleasant place to be, I will add. Mm. Story for another day. 410-319-8888. And George, thanks so much for that call. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And let us go to Hank. You're on the air.
How you doing today?
Good, Hank. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm the gentleman, the guest you had there, right? Does he not realize how, I mean, what is he, delusional or something? We got
no, he's just somebody who has belief in what he believes.
Right? He, George Bush didn't get enough accomplished for kicking the beehive and re-aggravating it. I mean, we sat over there and had these people come on, help us go get the Russians. And then when we got what we want, we leave them out to dry. And they mad and frustrated. So then you want to go over there and tell them, look, this is the way you need to act. But you got something accomplished. You didn't get nothing accomplished. If anything, what he did was make us put in a more vulnerable position than what we have ever been. We have almost all of our forces spread around the world trying to push this idea of, all right, this is the way the America does it, and this way you should do it, right? What we should do is stop taking the sample from England and stop saying, look, all right, this is what England should need to do. And do it. I mean, just come on, man. We're bullies, and people are tired of being bullied by us.
Let me share a response. I want to get back to the state of Maryland here for a minute.
Okay, just real quick. What's important to understand is that the United States has interests abroad, and there's nations around the world. There's people around the world who are crying for help and who are oppressed by their ruling government. Okay, I think it's the job of the United States. I think it's something that we should definitely do is make sure that we have the ability to go to places that are calling for democracies, not saying that every single place has to have a democracy or every single place should live by our rules. But if people want to be free, if people want to have their women get driver's license, if people want to have.
So should we invade Saudi Arabia?
People want to. But I think
one of our closest allies.
It's one of our closest allies. But
they
I think I don't.
But you're like describing Saudi Arabia.
Exactly. But I don't agree with. I don't agree with the way Saudi Arabia governs their country. But, it's. Unfortunately,
well, we don't want to get into this. Right. I want to go back to state politics. We've been into this for a long time because I.
Right.
I mean, a long time.
We'll we can stay.
I'd be happy to do it one day.
We'll do it again. We'll do it again.
Iraq was about one thing. It's a three-letter word.
Very dark word.
It starts with O, ends with L.
With an I in between.
Because right. Saddam was threatening Saudi oil.
He was.
Couldn't have that. That's why we had this war, not to liberate the Iraqi
people.
And
the Saudis knew the trigger pin, or whatever we call it, to set off George W. Bush. And this is the legacy of it right now. We're living through it.
We'll see where we go.
Yeah.
We'll get you back for that one, Trey.
That's going to be a good show. Yeah,
President of the City of Young Republicans Talks International. I like that. 410-319-8888. Neil, you're on the air.
Thanks a lot, Mark and Anthony. This is Neil Janney. How are you?
Hey, Mr.
Welcome.
Janney. How are you?
Just fine. I want to first just briefly respond to a comment that was made when Anthony was on the air on Friday. I am 100% supporting, endorsing, and voting for Governor Martin O'Malley for reelection. I am a partisan Democrat. I'm voting Democrat across the board. Obviously, people can have differences of opinion, but I'm just speaking for myself. I don't know how that caller got in her mind some notion that I was supporting Bob Early, but it's just not true.
I'm glad you had a chance to set the record straight, Neil.
Yeah, that's right, and I want to be on the record.
That's right.
Just two things quickly. Mark, I certainly agree with the point that you've made about the Eastern Shore. You'll find this interesting. My family from my father's side is from Snow Hill, Maryland. There are a lot of very serious problems still down there and a lot of work to do. But and I don't know how much more time you have on your show, but hopefully you can spend some time talking about the ballot questions. They are very, very important, and I'll just summarize them briefly. There's a constitutional ballot question to convene a constitutional convention.
Which we covered last week.
That's right. And I just want to tell your audience that is critically important. The last convention we had in modern times was 1967.
Right.
Not much was accomplished, but just so people will understand this, we are still essentially operating under an 1867 constitution. We need a convention because we got a lot of changes to make to bring our constitution into the 21st century. You had mentioned briefly in your remarks the other constitutional question to increase from $10,000 to $15,000 the amount in controversy so that somebody has the right to a jury trial.
Right.
Folks, use your common sense. That's creditor legislation. That's for collection agencies and landlords who don't want to be bothered with jury trials.
That's right.
It's a bad amendment, and I would suggest that you vote it down.
It's very important.
Very important. We've got, as you know, three charter questions and eight loan questions for the city. I always urge voters to vote for the loan questions because Baltimore, being a major urban center, has to go into the bond market to get capital to improve facilities. And then, of course, you've got a number of quasi-private and private organizations who are seeking funding. This is not going to bankrupt the city. These are bonds. And believe me, those bonds would not be issued unless, you know, the experts up on Wall Street felt that enough funds could be collected by the city to pay the bonds.
I think the three charter,
right. I think the three charter amendments are also important, you know, to streamline the bidding process on certain minor procurements and give the city more flexibility in the utilization of surplus funds. But if you get a chance, I think you really need to emphasize that because, as you guys know, and you've got a lot of political experience, too many times, you know, people are caught up in the politics, and I can understand this year why that's so. But those ballot issues are very important.
Yeah. Neil Janney, always good to hear you. Thank you so much. I'm glad you set the record straight about who you are endorsing and that you're a great public servant. Good to have you on the air with us. Let me just, one of the things he talked about was the ballot question. As your listeners think at 410-319-8888 regarding the jury trials, I think he's right. I think that this push to raise the limit on how much you're, if you're being sued for X amount of money, that it will raise the limit to $15,000. It affects poor people and working people who then will be denied the right to have a jury trial to defend themselves in court when creditors or anybody else comes to say they owe this money. So I think that's something that it's a really important thing, and he's right. It is fueled by the credit industry to pass this. So be wary, folks. Be very wary.
Right.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Rodney, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I haven't wrote them down this time, so I wouldn't ramble on. I've got three main problems that I have with things that Governor Ehrlich has said. I respect your guess for his stance, his opinion. I have no problem with that. But I always vote on the issue, the candidate, not the party. And I voted for Democrat, Republican, Green, Libertarian. I'm going to put out there first. First, I have a problem with Governor Ehrlich and these Republicans saying they want to reform the health care bill, that it's not what it should have been when they're the ones who are blocking all the progressive changes that the president was trying to make in the very beginning. Also, the Republicans had 20 years to do this, 12 years under Reagan, Bush won, then 8 years under Bush. At no point in time did they even talk about health care, even though the Clintons tried to push it through the first time through. Now that President Obama got it through, Now all of a sudden, oh, we want to reform it. We want to do this, but we want it right. We had an opportunity to make it right, and you didn't do it. The second point that I have, which I find very interesting, is his running mate. That one caller earlier talked about when he ran with Steele as his running mate. When you went in Baltimore City, Prince George's County, certain areas predominantly black, Silver Spring and Montgomery County, and likewise throughout other areas in Baltimore County, you saw Steele Ehrlich is what the sign said, or Steele just as big as Ehrlich. But you go in other places, Eastern Shore, Northern Baltimore County, and so on, you saw Ehrlich, Small, and Steele. What's interesting now, you don't even see Kane. Why? Because Kane's husband, it's been reported under investigation, and all his signs you don't mention, and I find that very interesting, a little bit disingenuous. And the last point, and I'm sorry, I voted for Ehrlich previously, the first time when he actually won, because I thought he was a little more moderate, but I can't get behind, I've said this before, and I will never get behind any candidate who sought out, as he did, the Tea Party support, especially when you have the Tea Party saying they're fiscal conservatives, yet they were completely silent, non-existent under Bush, who ran up a $700 billion spending, defense spending, that they don't even talk about. $700 billion. We spend $700 billion to prevent terrorist attacks, yet 12 guys with $1.50 went to Home Depot, got themselves $1.50 box cutters, and able to do what no other country has been able to do. So I have a big problem.
All right.
The money that spent out.
Let me let Trey respond. Trey Lewis.
Okay, you make some great points, but I have to address this. The Tea Party is an organic movement of people who were tired of government spending and unreasonable taxation. They uprooted many Republicans first and foremost, and then they started going after Democrats. I do believe that Mike Castle, I do believe John McCain, I do believe Lisa Murkowski are Republicans, and those are the people they went after, and numerous other Republicans who they felt as though were not in line with their core values and belief. And in the general election, they're going to do the same, or they want to do the same against Democrats, and they put in place Republicans they thought was in line with them. The other thing is that the as far as healthcare issues is concerned, the first president to present true health care legislation was actually Richard Nixon in 1972.
It was actually Truman.
And so the fact of the matter is saying that all these issues and ills of the country are Republican issues, whether it be the financial problems or whether it be health care issues, is really that's disingenuous, because the fact of the matter is that both sides of the aisle had their hand in it. The both sides of the aisle had years to fix these problems.
More specific with his issues, when talking about the state, his issues he was raising about Robert Ehrlich.
Right. As far as his issues with Robert Ehrlich, I don't understand. I don't know what the direction he was going with as far as the running mate, because there are many of Ehrlich Kane signs all across the state, whether it be in Prince George's or Calvert County or Baltimore City. As far as the Steele issues concerned, there were many. The thing is that in the 02 race, what was happening was that the promotion of Michael Steele had to be known, because he was actually pretty much an unknown, just like Mary Kane to a lot of people, even though she was in his administration. A lot of people didn't know her. But the promotion of Steele was very important to show that not only was he a credible lieutenant governor candidate, but also who he was. And I think it's a very subjective thing to say that it was only because it was to solicit the black vote. It might have been part of it, but I think that it's very subjective to say that it was the only end-all be-all. Michael Steele had credibilities to himself that made himself a viable lieutenant governor candidate.
Any thoughts, Anthony?
Nope.
Also, Michael Steele was for geographical reasons. Ehrlich is from the Baltimore area. Steele is from PG County. It's very smart to pull somebody from the opposite side, the second most populous area. Mary Kane is from Montgomery County. Bob is from Baltimore County.
It's interesting they've had so little to do with each other since
Michael Steele's gone his own way. I mean, he's doing his own thing.
They don't even mention one another anymore.
Yeah, he's done his own thing, Whether good or bad, he's doing his own thing.
Kiss and sail a pair of pale and 410-319-8888 is the number here. And let's go to – I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. That wasn't fair. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Aaron. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Fine.
Hi.
You know, for me – party loyalty is asking too much of me this year. I just, in all good conscience, cannot bring myself to vote for Martin O'Malley.
Uh-huh.
And as I've And because Martin O'Malley, in my view, has done nothing for African Americans in this city or this state that merits my giving him a vote. And also, the way he's treated Delegate Jill Carter, I definitely could not vote for him based on that alone. The way he's disrespected her, the way he's disrespected Tricia Jessamy, those things alone say to me that Martin O'Malley isn't worthy of my vote, and I would rather vote for the Grand Wizard of the Klan because I would be getting the same thing.
I mean, I understand what you said the earlier part about Martin O'Malley, and there could be arguments made about his role in the African American community. I think you can debate that all day long, but to compare him with the Grand Wizard of the Klan, I think is a little step over.
No, in my view, I believe it's right on target.
I know you do. I'm just saying. I think it's a little you know, beyond. I mean,
Given everything I've seen, I believe it's more than on target. In fact, I'm understating the case actually.
Right. But Anthony, what?
Well, I think that what Aaron is expressing is something that, not to the extent that Aaron is expressing, but certainly there appears to be, and this is not breaking news to Governor O'Malley. Mm-hmm. There appears to be some problems in the African American community with his record. Whether we're talking about the support of MBEs and the success of MBEs in the state to his zero tolerance policing policy in the city of Baltimore. But Mark, let's be very clear about something. African Americans will come out tomorrow. Now, if it rains, I mean, I know it. This sounds so anecdotal. If it rains, and it's supposed to rain tomorrow. If it rains hard, I fear for the African-American turnout. But let me say this. I went to 3 rallies over the course of the weekend for Governor O'Malley. Predominantly African-Americans at all those rallies. Different African-Americans. Wasn't mm-hmm. the same union groups. They are so enthusiastic right now. And that's why I was telling Trey before the show, I don't know if you feel this, Mark, but it seems like the momentum really has changed and really is at O'Malley's back. And even if African-Americans don't turn out in the numbers that they traditionally have in Baltimore City, Prince George's County, I think Martin O'Malley is going to do well among African-Americans. I think they have weighed their options all the way to this end. They've weighed their options. And if we're being fair, Bob Ehrlich has not an extraordinary record on minority participation when he was governor, but a good record on minority participation, including doubling a minority participation in contracting for the state of Maryland that the previous administration had, Glendening administration. It was focused, it was targeted, and it was very, very much a priority. But his record, that's why he went out of office, Mark, with about a 60% approval rating among the electorate, including Democrats.
I think Bob Ehrlich, as far as Republicans go,
yeah,
has done.
I like that caveat.
has done an admirable job in terms of reaching out to the African American community where other Republicans across the country could care less.
Mm-hmm.
And I will give Bob that. I think that's true. I would never say that Martin O'Malley is part of the KKK, no. But I would, I think you can raise issues that he was raising. by the way, it's supposed to be sunny tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Sunny and in the 40s, up to the 52.
Okay. Well, I hope that's true, but I know that...
No, it says sunny here, yeah. unless, you know, but I'll have to call home and check with Valerie.
Yeah, check with Val. She's
she always knows the weather better than
the meteorologist in the family.
One thing I have to ask a question to is, and I hope a caller can answer it for me, is that I understand the black community is overwhelmingly registered Democrats, but we're looking at candidates. We're looking at candidate versus candidate. We're talking about Governor Martin O'Malley. We're talking about Governor Bob Ehrlich. And they both have records in which they have done contributions to the African-American community. In my opinion, I believe Bob Ehrlich has done more, especially in regards to higher education, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, I still don't understand, what is the allegiance? What is the unwavering allegiance to Martin O'Malley from the black community? They come out in droves and support him, even though when they leave the rally, they say, I can't really stand Martin O'Malley. I don't understand it. If someone can call and answer that for me, I'm just curious to know, if you don't support and like a guy so much, why do you support him?
Well,
why do you vote for him, I should say?
I can't call in and tell you, but I could tell you, but we're out of time, I think.
We are out of time.
Out of time.
Trey Lewis, always great to have you on the show with us.
Mm-hmm.
Good show.
Good to have you here, man. And
yes,
we'll see you after the election, see what's going on, right?
Yeah.
Folks, stay with us. We'll be right back to talk more about politics and life in our communities here. We'll be talking to Ben Jealous, president of the NAACP, who'll be joining us for a bit this hour. I want to remind you, on the way to our break into traffic, the support for WEAA is provided by the Cape May Jazz Festival, presenting the Yellow Jackets, Javon Jackson, and Les McCann Friday, Saturday, Sunday, November 12th through the 14th at the historic Victorian City by the Sea, Cape May, New Jersey. More information online at capemayjazz.com or by phone at 877-7-CMJAZZ. Stay with us. We'll be right back.